Blog Talk Radio.
Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and welcome to Empower the Spirit. This is Doug Kelly, your host. I am so happy you could join us today. Today is Sunday, October 24th, 2010. We apologize for the late start this morning. Blog Talk Radio was having some server errors, and we just could not connect. And so we finally were able to connect, and the universe is now smiling back on the Doug. Cool. Today, I've got an interesting guest with me, and I'm interested and excited about talking with her. Patty Greer, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
And today... I'm a little bit off my game here because of all the plethora of technical issues I've been dealing with the last half hour, and so please forgive me, but let me give you a little bit on Patty. She is an eclectic, should I say, individual. A lot of interests. She's an award-winning documentary filmmaker, which I am also impressed with because she started out with really no knowledge and then has made some pretty nice documentaries, if the trailers are any indication of such. She's also into basically expanding awareness, consciousness. She's got some interesting stories to tell. And let's just go get into that, Patty. Where did this all start, this, shall we say, new life of yours?
Well, you know, starting, I don't know if there's such a thing other than birth, but, you know, I'm now in my middle age, and I feel like this is going to be the first show where I'm speaking from the new paradigm.
So you're, like, 29 now?
I'm 29 again.
Oh, cool.
And my previous pile of years I'm looking at really as a timeline. UFO Magazine is honoring me with the cover and a full feature story of my life and my career for the holiday edition. So it's made me really sit down and look at my experiences as a timeline to see how I got to where I am today. And I have to say that I don't think it's easy to get your show running this morning. I don't think anything is really easy anymore, but after finally going through the experiences I've had, I'm seeing today that I wish I could share the view out my window just past the computer screen. I've moved to 10,000 feet up in the Rocky Mountains. I'm looking at mountain peaks of snow and just below beautiful fields of orange and yellow aspen trees. I live in the most exquisite place I've ever been in my life. I'm with the most magnificent man I've ever known. But to get here, I almost died. And I want everybody to know that no matter how hard it gets, we cannot give up on our ultimate goals and intentions. And I look today at my life, and I am so grateful that I never gave in. And I know that I had many opportunities. The movie career was a gift of surrender. When I was probably 6 years ago, I had spent my whole life playing music. I have five CDs. And I played the harp, the piano, sang. I played all over the place, and I absolutely loved it. I wrote songs very much like my father, who was a 1950s crooner. And my life was devoted to music. So I had this huge harp that took three people to move. The thing was a beast, but it was gorgeous, all carved and covered with gold leaf. But every time I had a gig, I had to find people. I sometimes hiked down to the road and flag down cars so that I could find two humans to help me get the harp in the car. So to make a long story medium, I bought myself a smaller harp 6 years ago with fluorocarbon synthetic string, and it had incredible sound. So I played this harp all over. I found myself, since it was so easy to move, playing at the homeless shelter on Thanksgiving after I had my fat family dinner. And then at the holidays, I would go to the children's hospital and play for the doctors and nurses. And I started really realizing that it wasn't nightclub world anymore, but time to really go into our sensitivity. So I found myself being drawn to gigs where I was performing for the spiritual masters coming into America and the audience of people dressed in white sitting silent. And in the last few years, once I got this small harp with synthetic strings, I started finding cuts on my fingertips that got worse and worse. And then I started putting on Band-Aids to perform. When I got up to 6 Band-Aids, I was still being stubborn until my fingers were catching on the strings because of the Band-Aids, and I stopped cold in my tracks. Something happened to my hands from the harp strings, and I went to every kind of doctor for the last 6 years, and nobody could heal me. I did everything under the sun, I mean every kind of healing aspect, and it wasn't until 2006 that I ran into some Unity ministers who had just come back from England and the crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to play my harp at Unity Church every other month, and, you know, I would play for anyone. It wasn't about money. It was just about sharing the love, and all of a sudden, the love came back and bit me in the butt, and I had no cricket. So, you know, you've got an opportunity at that time when you realize your career's over, and my hands got so bad that I didn't even want to go out of the house. I was confined to gloves and Band-Aids. And I have to admit, it ended 1 week ago.
Really?
I have been in hell mode for 6 years with my hands until a week ago. And with all the doctors and you know, the system, nobody, I can't believe nobody really knew something as simple as Vicks Vapor Rub.
Really?
And it healed me. After 6 years and probably $20,000 worth of doctors and everything but voodoo, I finally healed my own hands with some salve. And I'm looking at my hands today with such gratitude and realizing that if I hadn't gone through such a challenging process and had to give up so much of what I thought was important to me, I don't think I would have made it to where I am today. But what a draining process.
I'll bet.
So as I looked at my friends, the ministers from Unity, and they had just come back from the crop circles, we were having a conversation, and I couldn't stop staring, and I said, "Stop talking. What is so different about you? I don't even recognize you. You both look totally different." And they said, "Well, it was life-changing." So within 6 weeks, I bought myself a ticket and went over to England, and I discovered the crop circles. My intention was, I thought, to heal my hands with maybe extraterrestrial healing ability.
Uh-huh.
Because nothing on earth I could imagine was going to take care of me. So I went over there in full surrender. And in 2006, I took my younger daughter, who wasn't passionate about the crop circles, but she was willing to go there with me because she felt like she needed to protect me because I'm one of those moms that bought a Harley. You know, I mean, there's no limits to what I would do. So she, you know, she thought she'd keep me on a slight leash. So we went to England, and within the first day, we stepped into a real crop circle. And we're walking in the tram lines, which is where the tractor lays its tires, and I could feel it before we were even in the formation. Every hair on my body stood up. I had goosebumps head to toe. The top of my head was tingling, and my heart was pounding. And it was raining and cold, and the wheat was up to our waist. It was not perfect weather. But we were just drawn, so we kept going, and when we got into the formation, it was like the door opens and the wheat is laid down in perfect divine order. There wasn't one shred of wheat out of place. It was so meticulous.
Like it was combed.
Like it was combed, and you're in the middle of acres of wheat, so to find them is a miracle. You either have to fly over in a little microlight and mark your GPS and then go down and find the coordinates, or have somebody give you very specific directions, climb over the fence, count 5 tractor lines to the left, and then keep on going about 8 minutes. You know, this is the kind of directions that we need to find crop circles. It's really a treasure hunt.
Huh. Really?
My daughter and I found this one easily, and we were with another lady who was the Archdruidess of Stonehenge. So the three of us were in the formation. We had just met her. I didn't know her well. And we are having the full-on experience because this thing had energy that would make anybody's hair rise. So now we're walking slowly around the perimeter looking at this magnificent piece of art. And right in the middle of a side circle, there was this area that somebody had clearly hacked up with some kind of a tool. Everything was perfect except this one area was just ripped to shreds. So we're kind of looking at it, trying to figure out, and I knew nothing. I was green as could be with the crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
And lady and I looked over because it's pouring rain, and I didn't want to leave, but my daughter said, I'm going to head back to the car. So I looked behind me, and Victoria, the Archdruidess, was also running her pendulum. So we came together, and I said, what did you get? And we both agreed we got the same information, which was it was a real crop circle made by balls of light, but a human had trashed the center with some kind of a tool.
Hmm.
So standing there really loving the feeling, and I start hearing somebody yelling at my daughter. And I look across the field, and, you know, like a mother of anybody, I went tearing it out to rescue myself. And by the time I got there, she's standing in front of a full-body man with a white satchel across his chest, and in it was a hacksaw.
Really?
He was the farmer, and he's yelling at my daughter, didn't you see the no trespassing signs? You get off my property. Now, my daughter was smarter than I would have ever been. But she said, no siento, señor, no entiendo inglesa. Speaking Spanish. Well, thank God I speak Spanish, too. So I came up and acted like a foreigner, and then up walks the other woman, who I really didn't know. Thank God she spoke Spanish, too. So the three of us pretended that we didn't understand what he was saying. We just kept smiling at him, even though he was raging, and finally he left. So what we had there was my very first formation was the proof of what's going on. The true formations, which there are absolutely happening, and you can feel it physically unless you're completely shut down. My daughter, who had no interest, admitted, I hate that word, that she really did feel something and that it did move her. And that just got me started.
So let's focus in on what that meant to you, consciousness-wise, existentially.
What it meant to me was that we are being visited by higher dimensional beings. What it meant to me was that the famous footage of the Oliver's Castle crop circle that laid down right before a photographer's eyes, a man actually got physical footage of two balls of light circling over a wheat field, and the wheat laid down before your eyes, and then they checked it and moved away.
Wasn't that brought out as a hoax, though?
Well, you know, yes, it was by some people, but you also heard the hoax of these two old guys, Doug and Dave, that made all the crop circles in England. That's
right.
Another hoax. I mean, those guys must have been really gifted because the same night they made three in Wiltshire, they made two in France, one in Germany, and two in Croatia.
Right. I mean, there's no doubt that they have made their share, but they can explain all of the crop circles that appear. But the information that I'd had on the balls of light, you know, creating those circles was that it was CGI'd. I can't quote you a source on that, but that's
what is CGI'd?
Computer generated, or in other words, it was hoaxed. But
regardless,
obviously these crop circles are appearing, and you know not all of them can be chalked up to hoaxers. So, but again, back to the direction of, you know, what does it mean? I mean, it means to you that we're being visited, or that there are some other types of entities here, potentially interdimensional, whatever. And
right.
That's obviously a fascinating topic. But This obviously represented a life change or a chapter change, if you will, for you, right?
It did, but I want to elaborate on the footage that you're saying that some guys claimed it was a hoax.
Okay.
That particular footage, for some reason, I got permission to use it in my first movie, which we'll get into in a minute. But I took the footage, and I came home with it, and I knew nothing about filmmaking. And I was sitting there with an entire movie in my hands that somehow I brought back from England. I thought I was just bringing back footage to show friends and family because it was so mind-boggling. But I sat there with a new editor who was only 26 years old, and he said, "Tell me what you want." So we started playing with that famous footage of the balls of light that some people believe is debunked or phony.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, "Reverse the footage." And he said, "Why?" I said, "I don't know." He reversed it, and I said, "Slow it down." He said, "How slow?" And I said, "I don't know, 30 degrees, 30%. Why did you choose that?" And I said, "I don't know. Just do it." He slowed the footage down and reversed it, and he ran at 30% less speed. And between these two balls of light, right before the field was laid down, I caught a line of communication that is a black and white straight line between the two balls of light. And what I have to say, I mean, once I finished screaming, "Oh, my God, look what we found," to me, I don't think anybody could debunk what I found. So, you know, I'm tired of the debunking, and I don't talk about it in my films, but it is a big reality because we are being shown on planet Earth that we need to keep our head in a box and that there's nothing more than what meets the eye. But too many people now are realizing that there was so much more. And what I found on that footage came to me intuitively, and it came to me very clearly because I know nothing. I knew nothing at the time to say 30%. My movies have all been made in this way.
Yes.
So 2006 was my very first formation, but the first one I walked in, I knew this was something out of this world. So I took my daughter back. You know, we did our little Europe adventure. But the very next summer, I came alone to England, and I went 9 weeks.
Wow.
And my 9 weeks were devoted to the crop circles, and I traveled alone, and my hands were horrific, so it wasn't easy. But I went, and I really, this was before I had made any movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2006 was my appetizer. 2007, I went with the intention of learning about the crop circles and actually laying in them for days so that I could shift my vibration in my body and come back to being fully healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I laid down in my first crop circle, which was on Sugar Hill in Wiltshire. It was this big, huge formation. And I walked my way right to the center, and it was almost like I was following directions. I laid down, I closed my eyes, and I had a full-on out-of-body experience.
Really?
I don't remember much of what happened, but I know that immediately when I came back, I was dizzy. I stood up, and it was like I was in love. You know, it moved me into a place of nothing mattered. And everywhere I went, all I did was take pictures. Within 2 weeks, I had over 1,100 photos of crop circles. I was flying with all the pilots. I was acting like I knew my stuff, but it was all intuitive. And then I took myself to the Glastonbury Symposium, which is the big crop circle event in Europe once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I met all of the great speakers, and I was so moved that I hired the film crew, not knowing why, that was filming the symposium, and I asked them if they would meet me in Wiltshire a few hours away to film the crop circles with real movie cameras, because I just had a little Canon $150 snapshot camera,
mm-hmm.
1,100 gorgeous photos. So the film crew came, and I brought all these speakers from the event, came back to America, and that's when I discovered the footage was real, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure people will still debunk it, but I think if anybody watched my first or fourth movie and really looked at the footage, they'd see something they didn't notice before. And this line of communication is right before the field lays down. And it's either digital or binary. I'm not scientific. I don't know what these communication devices are, but it's visibly there, and you can see it in my movies. So I brought back all this footage, and I made my first movie, and it just fell into place. Everything was so easy. It was like, how can it be this easy? When the movie was done, I was like, what do you do with the film? So I looked on the internet, UFO movies. There's one huge event in America called the International UFO Conference. Have you ever been to any of them?
No, I haven't.
I call it it's like the crash course in ufology. Everybody who's anybody comes there. So I sent my movie, and I said, hi, I don't know anybody, but I've got this Crop Circle movie that I really love. And so they said, you missed the film festival deadline by 2 weeks, but my dad, who owns the event, loves Crop Circle movies. Just send it anyway. I got a call 3 days later. They invited me to show my movie, not in the film festival, but they threw a special Tuesday lunch.
Really?
My movie.
Wow.
So it's almost like I had a magic carpet since the day I laid in the Crop Circle.
That's interesting. Okay, so let's talk about other things related to this, or, you know, this, you call it new tools, new paradigm type of thing. You know, what does that mean for your life otherwise in other areas?
Well, you know, I think that the life that I was leading before Crop Circles was my entire life for a very long time. And I would say that if I looked at that entire package, that I'm operating on about 5% previous life and 95% new paradigm. I even rewrote my telephone book because there's only 15 people in it compared to 185.
Right.
And what this is an acceptance of the new paradigm. And the new paradigm, what does it look like? It is not allowing what's going on planet Earth right now to bring our energy down, not allowing the systems that are collapsing to destroy our life, but to have the awareness to rise above it with consciousness. And it's not an easy chore.
No.
It's not an easy chore at all. But I think that surrender plays a very big part. So I've created this list of tools for the new paradigm, and I only write them in because I've experienced each one of them myself. And it's not at all my ego speaking when I say that I'm living in the new paradigm today. I'm kind of in elated shock that I'm not still attached to the corrupt systems, but I had to give up most of my life savings to get out. The freedom, though, of not being attached to these banks, these mortgage companies, these situations that we know are collapsing in America, that we know are corrupt, the freedom of just saying no is rather huge, but we don't want to, you know, give up our credit in case, you know, maybe that system doesn't fail anytime soon. So I think the most important thing really is watching our thoughts, feelings, words, and actions, because that's the only thing that's going to carry us through.
All right, well, so let's expand on that a little bit. You know, how does one, you know, what are you really saying? Watch your words, thoughts, actions, so forth. What does that mean? How does a person do that?
Well, what it means probably is to take into account everything going on in your life and almost do a dissection of the things that are working and the things that are not. And it takes every ounce of our strength to actually say, you know, these friends, these family members even, are no longer resonating with who I am. And it's a very sad thing when you even let go of family members, but when there's a constant stream of negative energy, why keep that up?
No, you hit on an excellent point that I've been talking about for years, and I agree with you 100%. You know, and the way you've kind of positioned it makes sense as well. I mean, we all have our vibrational level, our frequency, our resonant frequency, and so forth. It's our paradigm, it's our belief system, it's all of our core values, all that stuff that goes into making us who we are. And we identify with like-minded people, obviously, you know, birds of a feather flock together, as they say. And yet there comes times in life when we change, we grow, we evolve, and maybe some in our life have not. And maybe we recognize that some in our life are dragging us down. They have negative energy. And we may not even realize it. You know, we've been around them so long, and we just don't realize the effect that that negativity is having on us. So what I have been talking about for years is this very same thing, and, you know, liken it to toxic relationships in one form or another, and that it's okay to sever those relationships regardless of who it's with. And that's essentially what you're saying.
It is freeing for both parties. You know, when the people that were creating havoc in my field were coming at me, I knew that I was ducking to get out of the way, but I didn't know consciously enough to actually send an email and say, you know what, I really wish you well, and I really need to end this communication because it doesn't work for me anymore. You're not wrong. I'm not right. I'm just saying it doesn't work.
Yep.
So I did this with a number of people, and it wasn't to make them wrong. It was to free myself from something that was never going to heal. And I used to say to my daughters, when you meet a guy, stop, look, listen, stop thinking of what you want him to be, but really look at who they are. Don't color them. Don't, which I did my whole life until this new relationship. I kept being in relationships where I said, oh, if only they would change. If only I could help them evolve. And, you know, it's a bunch of garble. On the other hand, I had a life-changing experience with my hands. I completely had to leave society for 5 years and go into the woods because it wasn't fun going to the grocery store in shorts and a tank top and black gloves on my hands, hiding Band-Aids. I just got over it. The only time I went to town for years was to get food. I just moved into the woods, which I think was the best thing anybody could do today. But it's not easy because most people have to get to work, be in a city. But I think the number one most valuable tool for today is, if possible, to get yourself out of cities. I think the cities are being bombarded with a variety of energies because there's so many people in one place that if there's an intent to do harm, those are easy targets. This is not a thought of paranoia. It's just kind of the reality of what's going on. So I feel lucky that my mate just pulled me right out of Denver, Colorado, where I was living, and brought me up to the woods. And I'm in the middle of nowhere, but I'm in heaven.
In Colorado, right?
In Colorado, yeah.
Well, go ahead. Finish.
And I had mountain homes for years. My favorite one was up in Boulder, Colorado, where I lived most of my life. And this one mountain home, when my hands were starting to go down, I had a little waterfall in the backyard. And I think this has something to do with bringing in the magic in my life. In this backyard up in the woods, I had a waterfall that the animals could hear across the valley. And I went to the grocery store and I asked for all the bruised fruit, so I carved it up and I had food and water for wildlife for 6 years.
Hmm.
So I had a constant audience visiting me, and because I didn't really resonate with humans for a while because I was in so much physical pain, I had deer that took the apples out of my hand. I'd stick it in my teeth. They'd pull it off my face. I had a fox I hand-fed. I had a skunk and raccoons. And when the bear came, I stayed inside the house. I'm not crazy. But I found myself not totally crazy. But I found myself really resonating with the energy of wildlife.
All right, let's just backtrack just for a bit,
okay.
Just a little bit, because the point you brought up just a moment ago is a point that really needs to be hammered home. You know, we're talking about raising our vibrational level. We're talking about evolution, personal growth. We're talking about becoming more attuned with the universal consciousness, so to speak, greater awareness and all that. And one of the things that, as you said, sets us free to do this is to reevaluate our relationships.
Yes.
And it is one thing. I do a lot of work in the area of alcoholic relationships for years, and I can tell you firsthand that toxic relationships will kill you. And so if you are in a bad relationship or even a relationship that just simply no longer works, that's just fine. There is no rule written somewhere that says that you absolutely have to maintain relationships if they're with family or relatives or with spouses or partners or whoever. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And one of the things that so many folks fail to recognize is they go through all this pain, all this negative energy from these toxic relationships, and they're not understanding that when they're on their deathbed looking back, they're going to have a bad case of woulda, coulda, shouldas, if onlys, and might have beens.
Yeah.
And so you can't do that. You know, the listeners, if you are in these negative relationships, you need to reevaluate them. One of the things I've taught for years is what I call the two most important relationship questions. And the first one is, what do I bring to this relationship? You know, what do I add? What do I subtract? The second question is, what does the other person bring to this relationship? What do they add? What do they subtract? And here is the kicker. Anytime somebody takes more from a relationship than they add, they subtract more than they add, and they're not willing to change, the relationship's over. And I don't care who it's with. And I mean, I don't care who it's with. Because what the deal is that we're all in this life alone in many ways. We're with us 24/7. We need to make sure that we're fulfilling our own purpose, our own life, our own dreams. And a lot of times, negative relationships will suck the life right out of you. In fact, they've been likened to energy vampires. So I just wanted to hammer on that point that you brought up that is absolutely essential to raising your own consciousness.
Well, I think you nailed something that I have also pulled into my consciousness, which is that humans are generally givers or takers. And people are one way or another. And I didn't recognize that until now. This is the first relationship I've ever been with another giver. And we're both so oozing with generosity that it is, it's like 110% joyful.
That's excellent.
But it makes me look at all of my previous relationships and wonder, what the heck was I thinking?
Absolutely.
I just didn't know any better. So whoever's listening who's in an unhappy relationship, honor yourself first.
Amen. And
so next thing you know, you get hit by a truck or something, and then you're right, you're laying there going, shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Yeah, and that's the point. If you're in a bad relationship, or if you've just outgrown the relationship, again, that's just fine. There's nothing, and that's the problem with society and with culture and social conditioning and religion especially, that has made us think that we have to remain in certain relationships when we don't. And this is not being selfish in a bad way. It is, as you said, honoring yourself first.
Yes.
And you know what? The chances are that if you're in a negative relationship, you know, they're also feeling certain aspects. It's like trying to put a square peg in a round hole. It just doesn't work anymore. It doesn't mesh. Your energy levels, your energy vibrations need to mesh in order for the flow to happen. And this is not, I know it can maybe sound a little new agey, but it's really the way we operate it. You know, people look at another person and they'll get a vibe. Well, I just don't like the vibe of that guy. People say that all the time. And that's exactly what we're talking about here.
Yes.
You know, your vibe is constantly changing and evolving, and it's dynamic. And so if you're in this kind of a thing, reassess.
Yes.
Honor yourself. You put it very well.
So first thing in the morning, you know, we can create an exercise for our mind. And because I had years in the woods, is a good way to put it, I actually found myself being one of the only people I know that I feel like I changed my entire way of being on the planet. Because the way I was before, yeah, I was successful, made money, blah, blah, woof, woof. But it didn't make me happy on the inside. There was always something missing. And what was missing was honesty, was love, was integrity. And so I would wake up in the morning and the very first thought is, oh, thank you for another day. And I learned a spirit exercise that would take any emotion and shift it. Supposedly, it takes 17 seconds to recreate the energy field in your entire system. So these people taught me to take 17 seconds where you close your eyes and you think of the most ecstatically exquisite moments of joy that you have had. So you just layer them on top of each other and you look at the second hand of the clock and you've got 9 more seconds. So you layer on a few more. It can be chocolate souffle or making love or a great film or whatever it is. And by the time those 17 seconds are up, you have forgotten about what bothered you. So I find that when I get up in the morning, my first thoughts are really, really important because they set the tone for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And setting intention, we are now in the full moon energy. I've got all my incenses behind, you know, I've got a ritual set up for later. But as we take the time to really set intention, we're creating our life. Rather than letting our life happen, I think that we are in a period of time where everything energetically is speeding up now. My movie that I made in 2008 is called 2012. We're already in it. And it took the Evie Award for Best Feature Film at the UFO Conference the year after I was introduced for the lunch film. And this particular year, I don't know how, other than the ETs are helping me, but I won again, Best Feature Film UFO or related, and I won Best Musical Score within a UFO program this year.
That's great.
I'm up to 6 awards, but it's still not a money-making business because it's balanced by the reality of the physical world. My movies, which I love making, are totally evolutionary. They tell the truth. I don't do third-hand information. I only interview first-hand experiences.
That's good.
And I also, because I was a musician my whole life, all that music, interestingly enough, has the right lyrics for these movies. So my music, I'm really glad I have free soundtrack, but I'm going, how did I know to write those songs that are working in my movies now?
Because that's apparently part of who you've always been.
Yes.
Synchronicity.
So in 2001, here's an interesting story. I was dating a music producer. This is before I knew anything about UFOs, balls of light, ETs, any of it. I just had my mountain house and all the animals I hand-fed. I wake up in the morning, and my partner was staring at the ceiling and kind of shaking. And I said, ooh, didn't sleep. And he goes, do you remember what you said in your sleep last night? And I said, chill out, baby. What's up? He said, you woke me up, and you said, it's not what you see. It's what you don't see. And I said, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like that for lyrics. When I started to get up to write it down, he grabbed my hand. He goes, oh, no, that's not all. And then you said, it's not who you know, it's who you really are. And I said, wow, great lyrics.
Yeah.
He grabbed my hand again. He goes, oh, no, that's not all. And I said, okay, what? You look really frazzled. He said, there's these headlights came across the hillside in your backyard, and I realized there was no driveway. And all of a sudden, they turned left and came toward the house, and one of them came through the wall, circled the bedroom above our bed, and went out the lower window in your living room. Okay, now I sat up and I said, you don't drink, you don't get high, where is this coming from? Nice dream. And he said, that's not all. And he laid me back down. He said, then the second light came through the wall, and when it broke through, it turned bright lime green like a glow stick, circled also, and went out a different window. He said, I shook you so hard to wake you up, and you didn't respond. He said, when the second light came through, I shook you so hard the headboard was hitting the wall, I couldn't get you to wake up. I'm staring at him thinking, you are so off the wall. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about, but he was sure of it. He said, I know what I saw, and needless to say, way to get rid of a guy. He never called me again. We never dated again. He wouldn't answer my calls.
She's possessed.
I mean, I don't know. I had no idea.
Was there any, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, have you ever had any ET abduction experiences?
I have not. I have not. Anyway, this experience really sat with me for all these years because now I realize that all 4 of my movies have the lyrics, it's not what you see, it's what you don't see.
Hmm.
It's not who you know. It's who you really are. So the first therapist at the UFO conference that I got to be very good friends with is Barbara Lamb, who's done over 1,800 regressions with ET experiencers. So I went to meet her because they were showing my movie Tuesday. I'm the new girl in town.
Uh-huh.
I walk up to Barbara Lamb, and I said, hi, nice to meet you. And she's so sweet. She's this beautiful little blonde kind of granny girl. And she's a major crappie person, though. She can climb any fence and walk miles. So I'm looking at her, and I realize that as I'm looking into her face, in the bottom of her eyelids, she has these 2 lime green balls of light. And I was staring at her, and she said, excuse me. And I said, how are you doing that? And she said, doing what? And I'm seeing them with my eyes. And I said, what are those green things in your eyelids? And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, you've got these balls of light sitting in the base of your eyes and you're creeping me out. I don't know you. And so the whole thing has evolved piece by piece by piece.
So and what was it?
I think they were balls of light. I mean, I think that she's had so many experiences and been around so many people who have that it became visible in her physical body.
Are you psychically sensitive?
Yes.
Well, there you have it.
There you have it. And actually, after laying in that first crop circle on Sugar Hill, when I opened my eyes, I forgot to mention this, when I opened my eyes in my first crop circle, I saw plasma, clear as the mosquitoes. And what I see with plasma are these little round circles like in the sky. They almost look like a flying donut. Some of them have a dark center, some of them have a clear center, but I can see them like a tree. And then some of them look like oil slicks that move in the sky, and they have very strange movement patterns. But yes, I think I was definitely dosed with some kind of ascension material that day, my first time laying in a crop circle.
How about prior to that? Did you have psychic sensitivity prior to that?
Well, starting at 7 years old, I had a Ouija board, and my best friend and I played with it on a regular basis. She and I also celebrated full moons and dark moons at a young age, you know, kind of hiding from our family. So, yes, I've always been a spirit child.
So you had psychic sensitivity prior to your first crop circle?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that the circle makers or the ETs, which I do totally believe do exist here today, I think they choose people that they know would be willing to take the time to do the work for them. I believe what I'm hearing from the experts, which is that the ETs have made an agreement with the Earthlings that they're not going to fix our problems for us.
Right.
They can offer us the tools. They can find humans to bring the truth to the masses, which I think I'm one of those humans, but they're not going to interfere until we take it past the brink and start moving toward extinction.
Yeah, that's...
They're going to step in and say, yo, no mo.
You know, and I hope that that would be the case. You know, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the so-called Prime Directive, and I think that there personally are moral issues with that kind of a concept because... You know, it's no different than, you know, you're walking down a city street at night and there's some woman being attacked by a guy in the alley and you could say, well, you know what, I can't interfere, you know. I mean, she's got her life, she's made her decisions, I can't really interfere. Nobody would really do that. Well, I hope people wouldn't do that. They would come to her aid, they would, you know, rescue her or at least attempt to. And I'm hoping that any of these ETs that are out there, Galactic Federation, whatever you want to call it, who are monitoring us, will step in if the need be. I'm all for personal responsibility and we fixing our own problems. I believe we can fix our own problems. I think we have everything we need to correct our situation if we can get enough people to raise their vibrational level, to evolve, because as you well know, I'm sure there are so many people out there who are clueless. It's just, they don't even think that way. I mean, people who hurt others, people who take advantage of others, people who, I mean, look at the whole planet, you know, caught up in tribal warfare, as Stanton Friedman so often says. And he's right. You know, we're a planet and we fight. And we spend all these trillions of dollars on ways to kill each other rather than lifting each other up.
Right.
Now I'm just getting on my soapbox here. But.
Well, you know, I have a little box off to the right called Conspiracy Girl, but I keep her in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I watch everybody else's videos. I've got a handle on the Dark Lords and all the, you know, what's going on. I know about the skies and the water and the corn. But, you know, every morning when I wake up, I say I'm going to choose to keep my mind in a higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've got a movie camera and I am hot to trot, I'm dangerous. But I also made a conscious effort to not allow any of my movies to focus on the dark side.
That's good.
Because I know that what I put out hopefully will affect many, many people. And what I feel is true is that we have to choose not only our friends now very carefully and our business partners very carefully, but we have to choose every ounce of information that we load into our head, almost like making a salad. Every ingredient, it has an option to be organic and pure, or it can be a chemical pile of crap out of a metal can that's got stuff on the inside that we throw on top of the salad, and then that's how we're going to feel later.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm looking at television. I've got a dish at the house I'm in. So I've got hundreds of channels, and I'm going, check, 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 check. And it's unbelievable what is offered today. There's nothing clean. There's nothing healthy. And on the major stations, they are making sure to only offer us cop shows, hospital shows, and crime scenes. So, you know, we have to consciously, each and every person has to say, no, I'm not going to put that in my mind anymore. And when we go to the grocery store, when we look at the ingredients, which we have to start reading, we have to say, no, I'm not going to support this food company that clearly doesn't want to put anything good in their food. And then when we look at our bank statements and we realize, oh, my God, they added an extra chunk here, we have to say no to our bank. But I personally, I have personally dealt with most of the people that Michael Moore listed. I mean, he put their names forward. I want to know how he does that without being sued for slander.
Yeah.
Because this is what we need to do, is turn in all those people and clean up our planet. I don't know if we're strong enough. I mean, I'm kind of like you. I stand outside, I put my arms in the sky, and I say, come on, vacuum and vacate the problem here. I'm talking to them. I'm saying, I don't know if we have the strength as a race.
Well, I think, look, I'm a believer in the indomitable power of the human spirit. We are overcomers. We are explorers. We do eventually find a way. That's what history has proven. So I believe we are. And I also want to point out that I agree with what you're saying. We have to, absolutely have to choose what we entertain, what goes into our minds. But we also need to recognize that there are an awful lot of good people out there who do want change.
Yeah.
I mean, we're flooded with the media. You know, we're flooded with this. But people are, as a general rule, are trying to do the best they can with the knowledge and experience and tools they have at the moment. Most people don't lie awake at night scheming how they can screw their friends or, you know, cheat people or be mean or anything like that. You know, I've long said the system, the society and culture and all that, it keeps us so unbalanced, so busy. Most people are spending so much time simply trying to eke out a living that they've forgotten how to live, and they can't even have the mental free time to even recognize that. So it's important for people such as yourself and others to remind people to say there is more to this than just the status quo, you know, working, making tons of money, buying tons of toys. I mean, those things are fine, but there's more to it. There's a greater scheme out there, the higher consciousness, the awareness, that there's a bigger picture. I mean, if anybody wants to do something that will expand their awareness, download and install Google Earth and go to Google Space and start looking at galaxies. Take a close look at Andromeda. Take a look at all these billions of galaxies that are out there that must contain sentient life. Must. It must. I mean, look at our own galaxy. And the distances are beyond belief. If you look at that bigger picture, people will understand that we're not it. You know, I mean, humanity has been plagued with arrogance since inception. We think we're all that. Well, we are, but we're not the total all that. We're part of the bigger all that.
Yes.
You know, so.
And another site I'd like to recommend people go to is pattygreer.com.
That's good.
PattyGreer.com. I have 4 movie trailers that are free to watch, and it will give you a clue as to what the movies are about. But I think the most important thing is to really watch everything we feed our mind in every given moment. We have to really take a look at our program and delete everything that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And we also, I mean, 2010 is profound. I think this year, I know I found my twin flame, and I'm watching most of my friends that still made it in the new phone book moving, changing jobs, getting divorced. Nobody is sitting still that's on the ascension path today.
Right.
All of us are making drastic changes. And when we start looking at the third dimensional world, I mean, I look at my mortgage. They snuck $1,000 on and got away with it because they're a big bank.
Wow.
I got out of the stock market October 1st, but my broker took 16 days and lost 20% of my life savings because he could. So instead of being angry, I just got out. And this is what I say to everybody. Get out of what doesn't work and savor your life, because we have everything we need right here, right now.
That's excellent. And we do. And we need to stop looking outside of ourselves for the answers. So excellent information today, Patty. I really appreciate you joining me. And I apologize to our listeners for the late start due to Blog Talk Radio's technical issues. But we're glad we were able to get on. And if you'd like to hear more of Patty Greer, she will also be appearing on Paranexus Universe on Blog Talk Radio. What is that, in January or February? I forget which.
Early February.
It's on the schedule at paranexus.org. Also like to encourage you to visit mchschurch.org and the metaphysicsinstitute.org. It's just metaphysicsinstitute.org, where you can get your PhD doctorate in metaphysics and a variety of specializations. If you can identify with what we're talking about today, we'd love to have you as a member of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, mchschurch.org, where you can also share your concepts and perspectives and be part of this thing. We appreciate those who listen to us live today. Thanks for taking your time. We appreciate those for listening to the archive. And don't forget to visit Patty's website, pattygreer.com. Patty, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for honoring my work, and I wish everybody bliss.
Great. And if you'll hang on, coming up in a couple of weeks or two or three weeks, go to mchschurch.org to see the schedule. But we've got upcoming guests in similar topics. I know Mark Anthony is coming in December to talk about psychic development. He's a great guy, the psychic lawyer. So look forward to that. We wish everybody a great day and a great week. And until next time, have an awesome life.